Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Bonnie Kay, and welcome to the Straight Wives Talk Show. This is a hard-hitting show that discusses the complexities of marriages between straight women to gay men. Each week, my guest and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. If you have any comments you'd like to make during the broadcast, you can email me at bonkaye, B-O-N-K-A-Y-E, at AOL.com, and we'll be happy to address them. Before I introduce my guests for tonight, I would like to mention that time is getting close for our next healing weekend. It's in April, and it's going to be in Orange County, California. It's going to be our best healing weekend so far. We have an unbelievable lineup of speakers and workshops for women who come there. No doubt you will leave a different person than you come in, because you'll find the support and all the help that you need from women who understand everything you're feeling when you don't have to say a word. It's always an unbelievable experience, and so if you're interested in coming, you can go to my homepage at gayhusbands.com, that's gayhusbands with an S.com, and there's a link there for information for the healing weekend. There is limited seating, so try to make sure you get in. There's no cost for the weekend, other than your transportation and, you know, the house and the room rate that we have a special rate on. But once again, it's better than any therapy you could go to, because you get plenty of help and plenty of therapy while you're here at that workshop. And now I'm going to introduce someone who's always an integral part of our healing weekends, or has been for the last few years, Kathy Holguin. Kathy, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Bonnie. It's very nice to be back.
And it's always wonderful to have you. I mean, you're a wonderful therapist. You work with families. You're a straight wife or former straight. I don't know. Are you a former? Are you ever a former straight wife? I think we're always straight wives. Or
I've always been a straight,
wife. A straight husband. That's good. But you're still straight, right? I guess it's still part of our identity, no matter where you go in life. I always feel like I'm a straight wife, even though I'm going to be celebrating 25 years with my soulmate next week. 25 years. I'm still in love.
Congratulations.
How can I tell you? Thank you. I still think I'm a straight wife, so I guess you may have that same feeling, right?
Oh, yes. Yes, no doubt.
So, Kathy, you've been working with families for a number of years, and you're in Orange County, California. You've been very instrumental in helping a number of the women who are through this network who have found tremendous support and help from you in being able to move on in their lives. I always say that, you know, no marriage that's ending is ever a good marriage. You know, it's never a good issue when you're ending a marriage, but these marriages have so many more complexities to them than regular marriages and divorces. Would you agree with that?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Maybe you can talk about some of the ways that they're different.
Yeah, I would say, well, oh my goodness, they're different in so many ways. Primarily, I think in my case, I know it's not true for everyone, but in my case, I was living with a man who I thought was my very best friend, who I thought was my soulmate, who I trusted beyond measure. I had no reason to ever distrust him. And so for me to make the decision to leave the marriage was very painful because for the most part, I enjoyed my relationship with who I thought I was married to. And it took many, many, many years, which is why I think these relationships are so complex, for me to really come to an understanding and a reality that I was lied to and manipulated in ways that I never thought were humanly possible for one husband to perpetuate such a long-term lie to his wife. And so for me, making that adjustment was very difficult, and it actually rocked my whole foundation of what I thought was real and what I thought I could believe in, and it had affected the tentacles of that trauma just were so far-reaching even today, 24 years later. So I had no idea at the time how complicated the discovery was and what kind of long-term repercussions it was going to have for me.
How long were you married, Kathy?
I was married 18 years. We have 5 children together. I found out that he had been acting out with another one of the pastors at our church. My husband was a worship leader at a very large church in our area. Our family was we had a lot of notoriety. We were very well known. And so when he acted out supposedly for the first time, which I know was not the first time, but what I thought was the first time, I was 8 months pregnant with our then third child. And so he told me he needed to be hospitalized and because he was feeling suicidal. I had no idea why. And he was hospitalized on my birthday when I was 8 months pregnant. So I have a really good timeline as when everything started for me. And that was 1995. So it took me 4 years after that disclosure, but he disclosed because he had to, not willingly, that he had been acting out, but that he wasn't gay. He just liked to have sex with men. So we could talk about that if you like. And then the chaos and confusion for me just snowballed from there.
So that happened a lot. You know, it's been a long time. You know, how long did it take you to restart? I think that's a question that so many women want to know, you know, when they feel so hopeless.
Yeah, that's a great question. I think when when I first found out, I went into complete survival mode. I was pregnant. I had two young children, two young boys at the time. And I literally, I think, just went into shock. And I decided I was going to pull myself up by my bootstraps and just make this thing work. And so if I could just get him enough help, get him enough medication, get him enough whatever, that everything would be okay. So I lived in kind of in that in sort of world for about 4 years after that. And finally, when I realized that everything was escalating in terms of the chaos in my own life and I could no longer maintain that, I was having chest pains, I was having migraine headaches, I'd been hospitalized, and I had all of these kids I had to take care of. I should back up a little bit. So we had our third child. I thought that I could just make it happen. For about 2 years, everything was going okay, or so I thought. And we ended up getting pregnant again 2 years later, and we actually had a set of twins. So I have five children who are now grown. But at the time, the twins, I think, were about 2 or 3 years old at the time that I finally decided that I couldn't maintain this kind of chaos anymore and that I couldn't fix the situation on my own, because it didn't have anything to do with me. It was about his sexuality and whether I could trust somebody who had so profoundly perpetuated a lie for so long. So anyway, we finally got divorced. And I have to say that when I finally took control of my own life, my own circumstance, and filed for divorce, not knowing what was on the other side of that decision, I think that's when I finally was able to begin to move forward and create something for myself. Because as long as I was in the situation, it was impossible for me to see beyond it. I kept trying to figure out how I could make it work or how I could change myself or something around me to get what I wanted. And I had to finally realize that was impossible. And all I could control was myself and my own destiny. So I think once I actually finally made that decision for myself, then I was able to begin to move forward.
I agree with you. I always tell women that it's really impossible to start the healing process as long as you're living in it. Because there's no way that you can start healing when every time you turn around and look, you're reminded of what's going on. And you're pretty much in survival mode during that period of time, just trying to get through the days so you can figure out what to do. But as far as healing, that's something that's going to take a lot of time. And I think the longer you're in a marriage, you know, the harder it is to heal from these marriages. And I think we have so many more complications because, first of all, the issues of the children, you know, as far as having to accept, you know, accept a husband, gay husband's sexuality, it's easier today than it was when, you know, you were married, when I was married, you know, when I was married, which was long before you. I mean, it was kind of a taboo thing. You didn't even want people to know this. Because nobody understood the situation back then. There was, like, virtually no information. Computers were hardly in place at the time of my divorce. And there was really very few places to turn. And even as the years went on and I started the support group, and I was having meetings back in the early 2000s, people still didn't really understand it. Even today, they're finally starting to acknowledge it more and hear more about it. So there's a little more understanding. But when you were up against, in those days, so much ignorance and, you know, especially when the whole time of AIDS in the 80s and 90s, and if people heard you had a gay husband, they didn't want to date you, they didn't want to go out with you, they didn't want to be associated with you because they were so afraid they were going to catch a disease because there was so much ignorance about that. So I think it was much harder back then as far as getting support. Today, at least, the word is out. It's not an easy situation at all. I don't want to minimize the fact that it's out, that it's better. But at least people know about it. There's still a lot of ignorance about it, and people still don't get it unless they're living it. And, you know, I think that we go through a lot of pain because of that. One of our members sent me a letter because I just posted that you're going to be on the show tonight. And I think this leads into something also, so maybe we can talk about this a little bit since she asked for your advice. And it says, "Hi, Bonnie, happy holidays. I have a question I'm hoping you might answer on your program tonight, as it is a happy situation, but no one even really talks about ever really talks about it. After my divorce a year and a half ago, I went on a few dates, but none of them went beyond a second date. The topic of my situation didn't come up with any of those men since they really didn't get to know me, and I wasn't going to bring it up on a first date. I just met a very nice man, and we've been out on a few dates. I don't know if he is the one, but I have a feeling in my gut that it's possible. I'm nervous about telling him about my situation with my gay ex-husband because of somehow how some people react, thinking there must be something wrong with me if I didn't know. He ruined our marriage. I'm not going to let him ruin my chance for a happy ever after. I know you have been in a long-term relationship with your soulmate, which is the best role modeling for women like us who don't know if we will find love again. Can you talk about when and how you and your soulmate, when you first met him, how did you react? How did he have questions? Were you nervous about how he would react? I don't think anyone's talked about this on any of the podcasts I've listened to, and I think a lot of us have this fear and questions. I'm hoping you can talk about this for a minute or two. I'd really appreciate it. I bet I'm not the only straight wife who will be hoping that my date for New Year's Eve will be a special one. I'm hopeful New Year's, happy New Year's to you and your soulmate. And all the straight wives who are hoping to find happy ever after during this new year. And you're someone who was able to find happily ever after again, Kathy, correct?
Yes, uh-huh. I've been remarried for 5 years, actually almost 6. And we dated for 3.5 years, almost 4 years we dated. And I was without anybody for about 6 years. So there was a long time in between my healing process and then when my husband and I met.
So maybe you could address some of those issues of meeting somebody again.
I would love to. I would say, first of all, I am so happy for your listener that she is that she's taking a risk and she's willing to invest in another and a new relationship, and that she has the strength and the ability and the hope to do that. That says a lot about her tenacity and her fortitude and of the fact that she's a superwoman, because research shows we're all superwomen who marry these men, right? So we can go, that's
mm-hmm.
something, but good for her. I would say that the litmus test, I think, as to whether or not you're ready to really move into a serious relationship with someone, I mean like a committed forever after kind of relationship, I would measure it by how much of the shame and guilt do you still buy into the fact that maybe you have some part in that. Because your story is your story, and you are entitled to your story and your experience. The fact that you weathered the storm of such a trauma, it speaks to your strength, not to something that should be hidden or shied away from. And I think the more you can embrace your story and your pain and your process, the more a significant person in your life will also embrace it if you yourself feel comfortable with what was something that happened. You. It's kind of like, you know, if you have the mindset that you were victimized and powerless, and that somehow you kind of put out in the atmosphere that maybe you might be victimized again, that might speak to whether or not you're really ready for a very, very serious relationship. Whereas if you know that you were victimized and that you will not ever be victimized again, no matter what, and that you have full control of your life and your circumstance and your decisions, then your significant other is going to be a lot more understanding and is going to be able to trust that you've done your kind of healing to be able to move forward. So does that make sense?
It does. I just feel that for a lot of women, it takes a long time. I think it depends on the length of the marriage, the complications after the marriage, you know, the rebuilding yourself after the marriage. I know it took me 11 years after my marriage to start looking to find the person that I needed to be with. 11 years. Of course, I had two little babies, and I had to raise them. And I was going to school so I could, you know, get an education and have a profession. So I was keeping very busy, and I guess I just didn't trust myself enough that I had to first heal myself and that I
right.
had to find out why I was in a situation like that, why I stayed in a situation like that, why I didn't have the strength to leave that situation sooner than later until
right.
I could really feel the confidence and that my heart had healed, because it's not just like you end a marriage in many cases. When you have children, that marriage is still there. There's no way
yeah.
to just end it and say, well, goodbye. You know, you have children and you have to share on the whole children situation. So you have to be in communication, and it's not always a pleasant communication. A lot of our women don't have the best relationships with their ex-husbands because their ex-husbands aren't very cooperative or very supportive
mm-hmm.
or, you know, of everything going on. So I think there's a lot
mm-hmm.
of factors that's involved, but I always tell women they should really wait a year before really thinking about going out and dating. Do you feel like that? I think you really have to have
oh.
some healing time.
Oh, yes. And honestly, I would say maybe even longer than a year if because it takes that long for the shock and trauma to wear off if you've had
mm-hmm.
a really long marriage. And you have children, and you don't have time for yourself. And in my case, once the jig was up and he knew I wasn't going to allow myself to stay in a situation with him any longer, the gloves came off. And then, you know, all hell broke loose. Excuse my friend, but it was horrible. So the person I thought he was, I found a very different side of him. So then I was fighting him in court in, you know, battles and all kinds of things. So, yeah, I depending on your own situation, and everybody has a unique, different situation, but, yeah, definitely a year or longer. And you have to kind of gauge your own sense of self, right? Sometimes you just need to know that you're okay. And sometimes you need to know that you even have the ability to connect with somebody else, or maybe you just need to know that not all men are gay, you know? I mean, there's a lot that goes into that, but when you're talking about a serious, committed relationship, you definitely
mm-hmm.
need to heal yourself first, definitely.
And I'm certainly not advocating to anyone to wait the length of time that I did. I was just in circumstances where I just wasn't, you know, there yet myself. You know, I was just really busy, you know, being a single mom. I was really busy going to school full time. And
mm-hmm.
I just didn't have time in my life to even think in that direction. But I have seen women make a mistake in dating too soon. And
mm-hmm.
I truly understand that need for feeling, you know, human touch after a marriage like this, where most of our women
yeah.
have been living without any kind of sexual, you know, esteem because of the fact they've been made to feel that they're inadequate to start with. And, you know,
right.
some of those feelings, you know, are there, and you just want somebody to say, you're wonderful, or I want to sleep with you or have sex with you. And I think that's fine. I always tell women, practice, practice, practice till your soulmate comes along. But to get yourself really heavily emotionally involved, you know, outside that, you know, within a year, I think that's really a mistake. I've seen women do it, and they come to me and they say, you were right. And that's because they haven't healed yet. So they're still making, you know, choices that are not the right choices for them, just more or less out of, you know, the need to feel wanted or to feel beautiful by somebody. But these guys are really vultures out there, and they know when they see weak women. I mean, they are looking for you. And you know, I always say that you can't put yourself in the same situation. It may not be a gay man, but it still could be a predator. that's looking to take advantage of you. And so, I mean, they come in all kinds of sexuality. They can, there's plenty of straight predators out there looking to use women. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. And the more I got to know my ex-husband after I filed for divorce, I realized what a predator he was. And I realized how cruel and selfish he was and what a sociopath he was. I mean, he had a lot of emotional diagnoses that had nothing to do with his sexuality. And to the point where he terrified me. I would see him flip from the person I thought he was to this completely different person that was dangerous to me. And so, it takes time for you to, first of all, understand and to realize that that vulnerable, loving, nurturing part of you is, it's like a food source for you know, violent, predatory men. And so even just learning about that dynamic, apart from the sexuality part, is really important. You have to understand that the very best things about you, which is your ability to nurture and love and be self-sacrificing and all of those things, sometimes we don't have a lot of boundaries, things like that. They're beautiful, lovely parts of us, and they make us wonderful, nurturing mothers and spouses and wives. But if you're married to somebody or you're in relationship with somebody who is going to use those things and for their benefit and then turn them around and abuse you, because it's hard for you to be more vocal about what your wants and desires and boundaries are, then that's an area of growth for you. And the good news is that that's really an easy area to grow. And that's a lot of what I do when I, you know, work with those of us that call and that reach out, because sometimes it's just figuring out how to identify what's important to you, what you want, need, what you would really have liked to have said, and then practicing how to do that. And sometimes you have to do that within the context of dating. So dating has a lot of benefits, but you have to be very careful that you're not getting yourself in the situation that you just got out of.
And I think that's where we go wrong, as far as recognizing where we went wrong the first time. And a lot of times, of course, we didn't know our husbands were gay. I mean, I really believe in my heart that 97% of women have no concept even what gay is, because I still feel that women would believe that, why would a gay man want to marry me? I mean, that doesn't even make sense in itself. We don't understand these situations because we haven't been exposed to them. Even if we understand gay, we don't understand gay men who want to marry a straight woman. But I still feel that those men who do marry, they seek out women who are kind and understanding, and not because they're all necessarily predators or sociopaths. You know, you had one, I had one, but a lot of gay husbands are not that way. A lot of them are nice guys who just are making a big mistake, hoping against hope that marriage will change who they are and how they feel. And I really do believe they'd love their wives to the best of their ability, and they really think that they can become straight men if they marry straight women. They're not looking to be gay, because otherwise they wouldn't get married. But, you know, they really hope that this will change things, that, you know, those feelings will go away. And I've worked with enough gay men. I've worked with, you know, a couple of thousand of them over the years. And many of them really believe that. So the thing is that they still look for women who have those traits of kindness and understanding in case something happens. And, you know, this does come out, that somebody will love them and understand them. So I think that those qualities of being a caretaker, which many of us are, of being nurturing, which many of us are, of going that extra mile, of trying to be extra understanding, making deals, you know, with when it comes happens. I know that I certainly was bargaining, what can I live with? I think you were kind of saying the same thing. You don't want to break up a marriage where you have children. So what can I live with? And, you know, we fool ourselves into thinking that they're going to really go by our standards when they can't. But, you know, that eventually turns out to be the worst scenario to start with. So, you know, once again, the next guy you meet, very often you are still very vulnerable, especially if you do this too soon. you're needy and they sense it. You know, you want to find love and they sense that. And once again, these guys aren't necessarily good guys that are looking for you. They're looking for women who they can take advantage of, control, who will take care of them. You know, so they have narcissistic personalities, some are sociopaths, but a lot of them have other passive-aggressive behaviors, or they're into all kinds of things. And that's why I think that women first have to understand what's out there, as you were saying. We have to understand these kind of personality, you know, disorders that men have, you know, since we're going to be dating again, and what to look for, how to set boundaries, how to say no, how to be strong, how not to personalize if, you know, somebody says, oh, come on, otherwise you don't really care about me. You know, so much manipulation that we have to work around, right?
Right. And that's what I love, to, like, be able to have conversations. And sometimes with our women, like, I'll talk to somebody, you know, 1 month here, a couple of months later, 6 months later, right? So that we kind of, like, take care of each other, right? So when somebody comes to me and says, you know, this is what he said to me, and it didn't feel right, right? So learning how to trust your gut, learning how to go, absolutely, that isn't appropriate. What would have happened if you had said A, B, C, or D? Oh, he would have just walked. Okay, so then that tells you something, right? It's a learning process. It's sort of like you're... It's like a muscle that's atrophied, that you haven't gotten a chance to sort of work out, right? That you don't have strength in yet. And that's really all it is. It's just, and that's the good part, right? It's knowing that, hey, I have the ability to make these decisions for myself and to be able to get what I want, really what I want. And not have to constantly be advocating for somebody else instead of myself. I always say, I think a lot of us, like, we learned how to love well, but we forgot who to love first, right? We forgot how to love ourselves first before loving other people in our life. And
I don't think we forgot it, Kathy. I think a lot of us never knew this. I think that many of us came from such dysfunction in our families. I mean, I have found that the overwhelming number of women who are part of this whole scenery had dysfunction in their own families. Not all of them, believe me, but a lot. And that there was either, you know, unstable families as you're coming from, alcohol, mental health, drugs, all kinds of abuse. And so you never really learned to love yourself correctly. I mean, I didn't. I'm the first to say it. You know, I also was very needy because I didn't love myself. You know, you think you love yourself, but loving yourself means making sure that somebody is kind to you and not letting somebody take advantage of you. And I think that the more of a caretaker you are, the less you love yourself. It doesn't mean that you can't love people and take care of them if you love yourself. You just do it in a healthy way instead of an unhealthy way. Would you say that's true?
Absolutely. And, when, you know, I work from a psychodynamic, like, attachment theory kind of foundation. And honestly, when you come from a background like I did myself, I'd never had the luxury of loving myself. I didn't know what it looked like. I didn't have a blueprint. And I had attentive sort of loving parents as much as they were capable. But they didn't know how to take care or love themselves either, because of their own woundedness and injury, right? So it wasn't because they didn't have, like, the best intention they could. They just didn't know what it looked like. So I didn't know what it looked like. So I always say, you know what? Being married to a gay man and all of the trauma and hurt and pain was the best gift that I had ever received as I look back, because I am a totally different person now because I got myself. I finally learned how to love me and how to take care of me and to advocate for me, and that I was valuable and worth it. And because of the pain and the hurt, that was the turning point. And because I came to the end of myself, I could no longer implement the coping mechanisms I had implemented from the time I was 5 years old. It didn't work. This was too big. And finally, I was able to choose something different because of the enormity of what this was.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's get back to the question that the writer asked us. So I'm going to pose it to you. When you met your husband to be in the early days, at what point did you tell him about having a gay husband?
You know, it was such an integrated part of my story that it wasn't difficult for me. First of all, because I wasn't afraid of losing him, I thought I think he's a good guy. But if this is something that's going to be a deal breaker for him, then that's his problem. Because this is part of who I am, and you have to love all of me to get me. So it was very natural. It was probably within the first, I would say, month or two from when we met. And it was very kind of, you know, we're getting to know each other and talking about our prior relationships and marriages. And, you know, my husband is a hero. He married a woman with 5 kids. And I just told him, I said, you know, and we would talk about what happened with our marriages and whatnot. And I said, well, my husband decided he was gay, you know, after 18 years of marriage and 5 kids later. So we kind of chuckled about it, you know. But because I was so comfortable with my own story and I didn't take responsibility for my ex-husband's choices, and I thought, I really believed that, you know what, he was the one that lost out. He lost this blessing that could have been his for the rest of his life. And he didn't, you know, that's his loss. And I'm not going to be robbed of anything more in my own life and of my own future. And at the time, I was probably in my early 40s. And I was excited about having a sex life. I was excited about having a partner that was truly connected to me. I had done a lot of healing, and I was ready to move forward. So I think that it was because it was so natural. I just sort of disclosed, but it wasn't like this huge disclosure. What will he do? It didn't occur to me. I thought, well, if that's something that's not comfortable for him, then unfortunately, you know, that's too bad for him. So maybe that's.
And I agree with you. I mean, I didn't keep it a secret at all. You know, I don't feel that it's something that I was doing wrong. I don't think it was something I had to be faulted for. And as I often say, that in these marriages, it doesn't take two to make a marriage. To break a marriage, it only takes one. And I didn't want to have to take that responsibility, and because I felt that had nothing to do with me. And I didn't want people questioning, well, why didn't it work out? You know, people will always ask you that. But I do tell women, you have to do what you feel comfortable with. If you don't want to keep this, if you want to keep this part of the story to yourself, that's fine. But hopefully, you know, at some point in your relationship, when you know somebody well enough and you love them enough and you feel they love you enough, that, you know, this is something you can tell them because it is part of your story. And they need to know that sometimes you may have reactions and things that you do or things that you say that are based on that relationship. Because I don't know about you, but it took me a long time to trust again, Kathy. I mean, I just had the hardest time trusting. Was that an issue for you?
Oh, yeah. Of course, you know, I went through my phase. I thought every man out there was a closeted gay man. I'll never forget, I was walking one day after, and I have to say, after my now husband and I talked about it, after he learned more about my story, we were walking kind of in front of my little apartment, and we were walking down the street, and I just turned to him, and I just burst into tears. And he just wrapped his arms around me, and I literally was just shaking because it was so hard for me to trust him, and it was such a big risk. And he just lovingly and just calmly just held me and just let me cry. And then it was at that moment that I realized that part of my healing needed now to be extended to letting someone else in. And letting them take that part of me and trust them with a vulnerable part of me that didn't want to trust, that wanted to control them and wanted to control everything around me. And I realized I had to let go at some point or I wasn't going to be happy with whatever relationship I was in. And so I think that trusting is something that I had to practice. And we would crack up because I would be like through this sort of season of our relationship, like I would overreact to things. Like he wouldn't tell me he loved me for the longest time. And that just bugged the heck out of me. Because I'd be like, why won't he say it? Why won't he say it, right? And in his wisdom, he said, you don't need me to tell you. You need someone to really love it and show you. And now he tells me all the time. But I mean, but he had enough wisdom to know that words were going to mean nothing because I had been married to, like, the best wordsmith of all, right? And so, you know, and so but through that process, I was able to go, okay, this is a man that has integrity, that means what he says, that is really authentic with who he presents himself to be. But it took 4 years for me to really be able to trust that he was who he said he was. And that had been after being, you know, with nobody for a long time. So, you know, it just takes time and you cannot rush the process.
No, and I think one of the reasons why it's harder for women who go through this than other women is because we're so blindsided by this. And we think to ourselves, how could we not have known this? You know, we start to question. And plus the fact that when you live in a situation where there's a lot of what I call gay lighting, other people say gaslighting, you know, that takes, you know, when you're living with somebody who's living a lie, who's insisting that there's something always your fault, or you're imagining it, or you're making it up, or it's in your mind to protect themselves, then I think that takes a toll on your trust for yourself to make the right decision.
Yes.
I know it did for me.
Yes. That's where I talked about at the beginning of the show, where I was talking about how it rocks everything about your reality, because you don't know if you're coming or going. You don't know what to trust and what not to trust, what really is truth and what isn't. So, yeah, I mean, it's you can't even put it into words. And honestly, that really is that's the definition of the depth of the trauma resulting from betrayal, because when you can't define like that fog that you're in, it becomes really hard to move forward. And that's trauma. That fog is trauma. When you can't formulate a thought, when you can't think about what's going to happen tomorrow or next, or for my child's birthday, or like you can't even organize the simplest of conceptualizations. You know, when you can't work, you can't focus, you can't concentrate, right? It becomes like just an achievement just to be able to get through your day.
Right. And a couple other things, since I have you on, you know, this conversation. One of the things maybe you could talk a little bit about is the children, because this is just such a hard topic for women. You know, what do you tell the children? Women feel very terrible. They have to send their children into a home where there's, you know, it's not a stabilized home. Their husbands meet boyfriends and they go 1 week to one boyfriend, another week to another boyfriend. I mean, these are hard things for women to deal with, don't you think so?
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. I honestly think that's the hardest part. And I always wondered with my kids, like, they are now, my oldest is almost 30, my twins are 21. So we're talking, we've had a lot of years. A few different concepts or principles that I always implemented that I think were helpful. One of them was that I always told my kids the truth, but I told them the truth based on where they were at within their developmental phase of life. So if you're talking about really young kids, young kids are not abstract, they're very concrete. So you have to talk about what's happening in very concrete terms. The second, and so my kids were, one of them was a little older, and he had a lot of questions. And I always checked with him and said, do you want to know? Because I am always going to be honest with you. And I need to know if you're really ready to know what you're asking. So I would always kind of double check with them. And I would tell them there's no hurry. There's no hurry. I'm always here for you. But when you're ready, let me know. So I think that built a trust between my kids and myself to know that they didn't have to choose a loyalty. They didn't have to choose me over their dad. And I think that really helped them. The other thing that I think was really helpful was that as chaotic and confused as I was, I tried to take care of myself as best I could emotionally so that I could actually really be present for my kids. So I could focus on them. I could really hold them in their own pain. But I had to take care of myself in order to do that. And that's tricky. You know, it might be take a bubble bath. It might be if you have one trusted friend, talk to the trusted friend. You know, go for a walk, you know, talk to your therapist, whatever. And so because this is for as long as this process is for the wife, it's exponentially even longer for the kids because the kids, they are so identified with both parents that they have their own sense of identity and who they are that they have to figure out on top of their feelings about the marriage and about, you know, whatever else they're going through. So it's an ongoing process. My kids, my oldest one, I think will probably end up getting married like next probably year. So he's now going through a whole different phase of questions and processes that he needs to talk to me about. So that part never ends, and so you want to always keep that communication line open. Your kids always know that there's something going down, and you want to trust your kids to be able to trust their gut and trust their own sense of what's happening around them. Because if you pretend that everything's okay, then your child is going to not think that their sort of sense of what's happening is they're going to think it's faulty, right? So you want to teach them that they can trust their gut and that you will always be honest with them and affirm how they feel.
What do you do in situations, Kathy, where, you know, your husband tells you, well, I don't want the children knowing that I'm gay. And I don't want you telling anybody about this. Because a lot of our women face that. What do you tell them?
Yeah. Well, first of all, they don't get to make that determination. The husband doesn't get to make that decision. You get to make the decision as to what's in the best interest of the child as the child comes to you and either does or does not want to know what's. Does that make sense?
Yes, absolutely. Because I feel that when you lie to your children, eventually they're going to find out. And if they feel that you've kept this a secret or lied about it, they're going to have trouble trusting you on a lot of other issues. Do you agree with that?
Exactly. Which is why I think honesty is always going to benefit you. Because you have to think about it. You're building a relationship and a trust relationship with your child until, you know, the day you die or, you know. So, I mean, you're talking a long period of time. And so you don't want to do anything that's going to breach that trust because you don't want your child feeling like you betrayed them. And so I think that's partly why my kids have done so well is that they knew at least they had one parent that was never going to betray them and was always going to be honest. Even if the reality was painful to hear.
Right. And I think that there's a different ways, as you were saying, to tell children based on their age and what they're able to understand. And it doesn't have to be a sexual conversation. But one of the things I warn women about is that something you've touched on, I'd just like to reiterate this. You're going to go through a lot of pain when you go through these divorces or when you find out within your marriage. You cannot use your children as your support group. This is the worst thing you can do. And it's the hardest thing not to do because you're angry and you feel that you are, you know, are the victim here, and you are. And the thing is that when you start pitting children against your husband, it's not helping you. It's not helping them. That you need to find other senses of support, which is why we have a large support network. Anybody who needs support can get in touch with me. I'm happy to set you up for support. But it's very hard. I remember so many times when I just wanted to say something so badly, you know, because their father was behaving so badly. And I would just bite my tongue. I used to say my tongue was swollen out of my mouth half the time because I was biting it so hard. But, you know, I would tell people that children are made up of two parents. And it's, you know, when you talk negatively about a father, that part of them is feeling bad about themselves because they internalize it. Even if you say you're not like your father, they still feel their father is part of them. So I don't say you have to make him into a hero, but you can't, you know, use your children as your sounding board when you're angry. Would you say that's true?
Right. Oh, absolutely. And because kids innately feel a loyalty to both parents no matter what. It doesn't matter. And as children get older, my rule of thumb was to allow my kids to have their own experiences with their dad and to formulate their own conclusions about what he was and was not capable of when it came to relationships. This is really important. So when daddy doesn't show up at the baseball game for the third time, right? Instead of you allowing yourself to become angry and letting your child see the anger and then, you know, like saying negative things about dad, what you do is you say, wow, sweetie, tell me about what's going on for you. Let's talk about how you feel that daddy didn't show up today, right? I'm so mad at daddy, and I'm sad, and I'm so disappointed. Yeah, you're sad, and you're disappointed, and you're pretty angry, right? That's all you have to say, because when you validate your child's feelings, you are building their self-esteem, and you're teaching them to value their own feelings. You don't have to solve it for them. You don't have to make an excuse for daddy. You don't have to say, you're right, he's a dirty, rotten, liar, thief, whatever. You just validate their feelings. Because when they're 18 and 21 and 46, they're going to know, yep, here we go again. I'm disappointed and I'm mad and I'm sad at dad. Because here we go again. Same pattern, right? So you let your kids develop their own relationship with their dad based on their own experience. And it's going to emulate your experience with the wife because that's what he is. But your experience isn't their experience. So let them develop their own narrative and their own story about who dad is to them and what he's capable of.
And the reality also is that children should love their dads, regardless of what they've done to us. If a father wants to develop a healthy, positive relationship, that's the best thing for a child. And I feel that it's our job to make sure they have the security that they need and the love of both parents when possible, and not to try to discourage that because of our own anger.
Right. And I think the key there is when possible, right? Because
it's not always possible, trust me.
Patience,
I'm the first to say that's true. Not possible, but okay. But when it is possible, I think it's important to, you know, to try to nurture that. I just want to talk for a few minutes because our time is running out, unfortunately, about you've been to a number of our healing weekends. You've been very instrumental in helping women through their process. Maybe you could say a few words about it.
I would say that if you have any inkling about going to a healing weekend, go. It doesn't matter if it's your first one, your second one, if you're fourth or fifth one. If you need to be there, then be there. Because I love what you said at the beginning. Like, this is the best therapy you'll ever get. Like, and I am a therapist. That is so true. Because there is nothing that can replace the support and the understanding and the awakening that you have until you are with a group of women who have all experienced the same exact sort of, I don't want to say situation, but I mean, in some respects, our stories are just, they emulate each other. And to know that you're not alone and that you are in with, unfortunately, it's the club you never want to be a part of, right? But I mean, the women that show up at these meetings are just the most accomplished, lovely, educated, beautiful women, and you really realize, like, this is so much bigger than you, and that you've just been caught up in a dynamic that you never hoped or thought you'd be caught up in, and there is hope, but you have to be able to connect with other people to utilize that to walk away feeling like, I have hope, and I am not going to be the victim of this circumstance, and it is so empowering.
I think it's empowering because there's so many women there who, you don't even have to say anything. You don't even have to talk. Everybody already knows what the story is, and you just feel that camaraderie with other women who know exactly what you're feeling and who can be there not only while you're there, but great friendships are formed and, you know, support is formed so that you never have to feel in your life that you're going through this alone, which is why I have these, because women feel so isolated. They live in the middle of nowhere. We've had women come in from Canada, from Ireland, from England, from Hawaii, from all over the country and the world, and just because they need to connect with other women who are going through this. And it's a wonderful experience, you know, and it's just such a wonderful weekend. And, of course, I'm so excited that you're part of this weekend again, because you really help women with your therapeutic methods and that women have a chance to heal through, you know, you'll be doing a workshop for us on healing. And I know that whenever you are with Kathy, you always come out feeling so much better than before you're with her. So I'm really excited for it. Also, I just want to mention that Kathy does therapy in Orange County, California, but she's also available for coaching by phone. I have her information on this broadcast. You can read it there. And I'll also have it in the upcoming newsletter that'll be out in January. I did not have a December one. I gave myself a holiday, but I will have one coming out in 2 weeks for January. And discussing some issues that we all are concerned with. So, Kathy, any final words for the hour?
I just want to say take care of yourself, and you are lovely and loved and so special. And there is hope and there is safety. And take good care of you first.
And that's really good advice. And if you'd like to meet Kathy in person, write to me about the healing weekend. You can sit there and give her a big hug like I'm going to do when I get there, because I'm so excited I'm going to be seeing her.
I can't wait.
So, Kathy, to you and all of our listeners, I want to wish everybody a happier new year. Even if it was happy this past year, I want a happier one for everyone. And that, you know, hopefully that through support, all of us will get through this year together. And become stronger and become more aware of ourselves and learn to love ourselves better. I think that's the best goal, learn to love yourself.
Yes.
Would you agree with that?
Yes. Absolutely. And
no need to be what?
To be afraid.
Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't catch that.
Need to be afraid.
Right. Fear is there, but you can overcome it. And we're going to help you. So have a wonderful week. We'll be back next week. Love to all of you. Love to you, Kathy. And I'll be seeing you soon.
Okay. Love you.
All right. Good night.
Good night.